are pleased to be joined by one of the great football writers of all time, Mr. Gary Myers. You probably know him from the Daily News and all the other stuff, the books that he's written. And he joins us now to talk about the life and times of the great Bart Starr, who passed today at the age of 85. Thanks for joining us, Gary. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Richard. How you doing this weekend?
Good, good. Now, did you actually, he probably predates you as a player.
No, I did not cover any of those championship games. I'm not that old.
No, I didn't think so. But as a coach, were you around when he was coaching at all?
I forget what the year, last year that he coached, but it was probably right around the time that I started covering,
yeah,
which was in 1978. I can't remember the last year that he coached, but he goes in that category of a player who, you know, was a champion on the field, but could not make that transition and be a great head coach. You know, he couldn't will his team, you know, through his experiences and his demeanor. And the Packers were not very successful during that period of time that he coached, which doesn't take anything away from the fact that he won 5 NFL titles, including the first 2 Super Bowls. And as time has gone on, he's probably, you know, among the most underrated great players in NFL history.
Oh, no question. Actually, he coached till 1984, and I didn't know this off the top of my head.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
I did look it up. So, but yeah.
Okay, so the Packers didn't do much in those years.
No, no, not at all. His record as a head coach was 52-76.
Yeah.
And they only made the playoffs twice. So obviously, the coaching was not his forte. And
you know what's amazing when you look at his stats. I think he threw for a little bit less than 25,000 yards in 16 seasons, and had, I don't know, maybe like 140 touchdown passes somewhere. You know, I'm just guesstimating here, but I'm probably not too far off. And then you look at Tom Brady, who is thrown for 70,000 yards and over 500 touchdowns, and boy, how the game has changed. And you know, Starr's stats, you know, were reflective of the period of time that he played in.
Well, I'll give you those stats exactly: 152 touchdowns to 138 INTs.
Right.
His biggest year yardage wise was 2,436. And his completion percentage over his career was 57.4. His quarterback rating was 80.5 under the quarterback ratings now. So you look at those numbers and you go, Hall of Fame, come on. But, you know, it was a totally different game then.
Well, it was. And, you know, he played. He also got overshadowed by his coach, you know,
Lombardi,
who, if he's not the greatest, then, it's, you know, him and Belichick are 1-2 or 1-1A. Starr's career was kind of floundering. He was a 17th round draft pick, which shows, you know, everybody talks about Brady being a 6th round pick. Starr was in the 17th round. He didn't play much his last couple of years at Alabama, and then his career got off to a slow start. And then once Lombardi got there, I think they lost the NFL championship game in his first year, and then he did not lose another playoff game the rest of his career. He was 9-0,
yeah.
And he won 5 championships. And, you know, it's interesting. I'll give you a little inside information. I'm on the panel that the AP has put together in conjunction with NFL Films and the NFL to pick out the 100 greatest plays in NFL history. So they sent us a list last week of about 150 plays with the video. So it's really cool watching some of the older stuff. They have video of everything. And we have to rank them 1 through 50. And I picked out my 50 plays that I thought were the top 50, and now I'm ranking them 1 through 50. And I'm pretty sure I have the quarterback sneak in the Ice Bowl game in my top 10. I'm not sure how high in the top 10 it is. You know, it might be like 7 or 8, but I mean, I am old enough to remember watching that game and how gutsy a call it was, because if it didn't work, the game was going to be over. And Lombardi could have chose to kick the tying field goal and went for the win instead. And it was a perfectly executed block by Jerry Kramer. You know, Jethro Pugh of the Cowboys got knocked out of the way, and Starr kind of slithered into the end zone to win that game. That's probably more famous than any pass he ever threw as a Packer.
He was also, I mean, you know, we tend to not, you know, we may interview them, and I interviewed Bart Starr, God, in 1987, I think. My memory doesn't serve well there either, but he was such a gentleman, such a good guy,
yeah.
And you know, a Hall of Fame person as well as just a great player, and, you know, obviously the coaching we talked about, but, you know, he was such a great pro and handling people and so gracious for a guy as exalted as he was.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that was his reputation as a player, as a coach. And once his football career was over, and I think it's been well documented that he's, you know, had a lot of health issues the last 10 or so years. I think maybe the last public appearance that he made was when Brett Favre had his number retired a couple of years ago. He and Brett had developed a very close relationship over the years, and Bart was made it his business to be in Green Bay for that ceremony. And I believe that's the last time he probably made a public appearance of that nature. And you can tell then that, you know, he was struggling health-wise. And I'm sure the Packer fans are appreciative of being able to see him that one last time. It's sad, but, you know, he's 85 years old. He had a great life. He had a great career. And I'm sure as the accolades are pouring in today, that his family will be really appreciative of all the kind things that people have to say about him.
Yeah, I mean, he had, you talk about physical ailments. He had two strokes. He had a heart attack. He had seizures. Mm-hmm. He broke his hip. And he was undergoing stem cell treatments in a clinical trial a few years ago. And they had the big ceremony with Bart, you know, as you mentioned, Brett Favre's number. And at Super Bowl 50, they wanted him to be there. The MVPs of all the Super
right.
Bowls, and he was twice MVP, but he wasn't healthy enough to actually be there. Yeah,
I do remember that because I was at that Super Bowl game where they trotted out all the Super Bowl MVPs, and but that was a really special time in the NFL's growth, where television became such a huge deal, and the Giants were very instrumental in helping teams like the Packers survive, because the Giants endorsed the NFL, the whole idea of sharing the television revenue equally, when the Giants obviously were in the biggest market and they easily could have claimed, you know, wait a minute, you know, we're drawing all the viewers and the advertising money. Why should we share our money equally with a team like the Packers that are playing in the smallest market? But the Giants' willingness to do that is what has, you know, served as the foundation of the NFL, because teams like the Packers have been able to compete because the television money, which makes up the biggest percentage of the NFL revenue, has been shared equally all these years. And, you know, the same is true of the small markets, you know, that exist today, Green Bay, Buffalo, you know, teams of that nature that get the equal share of the TV money. And the Packers, being so successful with Lombardi during that era, really helped to raise the profile of the NFL. That was the real formative era of the Cowboys. Of the NFL, as the Packers won championships and the Cowboys lost those two championship games, the first two Super Bowl years, to the Packers. And I think the Cowboys in those days were the underdog and kind of the sentimental favorite. And that's one of the reasons I really believe that the Cowboys are so popular today, is because they came so close and they had all that heartbreak against the Packers, who were, in essence, like the Yankees of that era. And so many people rooting for the Cowboys to beat the Packers, and the Packers were the big bad bullies of that time. And that was just a great period of time in the NFL, and has a lot to do with where the NFL is today. And yeah. Bart Starr obviously was the face of the franchise, along with Lombardi and Paul Hornung and Jim Taylor and, you know, all those great players that they had in Green Bay.
Well, and the Packers were like the Patriots of today, that a lot of people like to root against. I've told this story on the air. When I was in college at Adelphi, we didn't have a football team. We had a club football team. And our first game was on a Friday night under the lights, and they had improvised the field and everything. And they were playing Jersey City State. And Jersey City State comes out in those green and gold uniforms that the Packers wore. And it was like, oh, no, we don't have a chance against these guys. And they drubbed us, you know. But it was just like, oh, that those uniforms were so intimidating back then. Right now they're kind of mild looking compared to, you know, the Raiders and the other ones. But they were scary back then.
Yeah, I went to Syracuse, and until recently I was able to say also we really didn't have a football team. But we're starting to turn it around a little bit now.
Yeah. You know, the amazing thing, we're looking back over at numbers and things. Bart Starr, you know, you look at quarterbacks today and, you know, with the exception of Tyler Murray and, you know, a couple of guys like that, you want them to be 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", 230, 40 pounds. Bart Starr was 6'1", 193.
The players were considerably smaller in those days. Tony Dorsett played at 185 pounds. Now you have running backs at 240 pounds who are just as fast as he was.
Yeah.
So the game has changed incredibly. You know, when you said before that Bart Starr's biggest year yardage-wise was 2,400 and change, and now you think that 5,000-yard seasons has replaced 4,000-yard seasons, which Joe Namath was the first one to do that. 4,000 used to be the benchmark once Namath got there, and now it's 5,000. And back in those days, if you got to 3,000, you had an unbelievable season. You know, of course, there were 14 games being played there, so the numbers would, you know, if you extrapolate the numbers and or prorate them or whatever, you know, the numbers would have been a little bit better over 16 games, obviously, but it's just a completely different game. But now they're just playing two-hand touch with the cornerbacks not allowed to basically breathe on the wide receivers. So it's more like a 7-on-7 drill than anything else. You know, in those days, the corners were allowed to really mug the receivers coming off the line of scrimmage, and it was much harder to complete a pass.
Oh, yeah, and the quarterbacks weren't protected. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers, and Starr didn't miss many regular season games that I can see, and yet back then, you know, there was nothing about hitting a quarterback below the knees or hitting him in the face or any of
right.
that stuff. They could just
right.
maul the quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, and, you know, in those days also, the quarterbacks called their own plays. Imagine Lombardi, everything we know about him, wanting to be in control of every last aspect of his operation, and in those days, letting Bart Starr call all the plays. Now, I think that was the norm in that era when the quarterbacks did call their own plays. But as you can imagine, Lombardi coaching today, there's not a chance in the world he would ever let his quarterback call his own plays. And Starr was known as an extension of Lombardi on the field. They kind of thought the same. And, obviously, they were, if you think about, Richard, if you think about quarterback coach combinations over the years that really stand out, it starts with probably Lombardi and Starr. And then obviously you have Walsh and Montana and Brady and Belichick. And, you know, there's a lot more that have been successful. You know, Bradshaw and Noel won a bunch of Super Bowls and, but Lombardi and Starr were the first two, at least from my memory of first getting into watching the NFL, that really stood out as an incredible combination. I mean, there are others that predated that, obviously, but that's the one that I remember the most is you think about, okay, quarterbacks and coaches, you know, what has been the best tandem in NFL history? And although their numbers, you know, Starr's numbers, you know, don't measure up, as we mentioned. The fact that they won 5 championships together and were playing for the NFL's pride in those first 2 Super Bowls against inferior teams like the Chiefs and the Raiders. But there was a lot of pressure on, even though the Packers were a much better team, there was a lot of pressure on them not to lose those games. And you saw what happened to the Colts in Super Bowl III.
Yeah, when the Jets beat them.
They might have been a better team than the Jets, but I think that the pressure of trying to uphold the NFL's name in those games, in that game, had a lot to do with why the Jets were able to be successful, because they just kind of played free and easy in that game.
Sure. Well, when you talk about, you know, when the legend becomes a truth, print the legend, they used to say the Packers only had like 5 plays, but there were all these variations on these plays. Now, obviously, they must have had more than just 5, but there was so much of the training where you had to recognize the variations and kind of improvise them as you saw them. So there was a premium on the intelligence, I would think, of the players and able to see those things and make those changes.
Well, the one play that we know that they had down pretty well was the quarterback sneak. I mean, they had great players in those days, too, you know, with Jim Taylor and Hornig and Boyd Dowler and the legend of Max McGee, who liked to think he liked for his partying to overshadow his playing ability. But, you know, he was a really good player. Marv Fleming, the tight end, was a great player. Those Packers teams, you know, physically now could not match up with today's NFL teams just because the players have gotten bigger, stronger, and faster. But, you know, certainly in that era, they were the dominant team, and they were a dominant team over the Colts that had Johnny Unitas, who clearly, career-wise, is thought of as a much better quarterback than Bart Starr. But, you know, the Packers were the better team.
Well, I think about Alan Ameche, but also you look at Taylor and Horning, and I don't know that Unitas ever had running backs, tandem like that, quite as good as those two guys. You could hand the ball off to those two guys, and Taylor was the big fullback bull rusher, and Horning was the, you know, the golden boy.
Right, you know, and then defensively the Packers had Ray Nitschke, of course, and who was – you know, one of the early era, not even early era, because the league's been around for a long time up to that point, but he's one of the middle linebackers that have kind of been the model and the standard by which others have been measured, you know, over the years. And, that was just a great era of football. And not so much in New York, though. The Giants going 1964 to 1980 and 17 consecutive seasons without making the playoffs. And other than the Jets winning the Super Bowl in 69, they didn't have much success, you know, either. But as the NFL was growing, they were doing it really without one of the flagship franchises, which was the Giants, having any success whatsoever.
Absolutely. Out of time. But, Gary, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your reminiscences about the late Bart Starr, who passed today.
Hey, Richard, if I can just say one thing real quickly. A really good friend of mine who baseball readers might know, he never worked in New York. His name was Jerry Fraley. He was one of the incredible baseball writers in this country, and he passed away yesterday at the age of 64. He'd been battling cancer for a couple years. So I just wanted to make a mention about him. He was a really good friend of mine, and he worked at the Dallas Morning News. He actually got there after I left, but I had known him before that, and I stayed in touch with him. And this has really been a tough couple of months for baseball writers, with Nick Cofardo and Marty Noble previously passing away, and now Jerry yesterday. So I just wanted to make a mention of that. Everybody, you know, hug your kids today. Have a great holiday weekend, and I'll talk to you soon, Rich.
Okay, thank you. Gary Myers, you know, author of many books, wrote for the Daily News for a long time, and is one of the preeminent football writers around.